are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be joined by Brian Kamenetsky from Locked On Lakers to take a look at the LeBron James extension and what that means in LeBron James's confidence moving forward with the organization, as well as the confidence of the Lakers organization to figure out a way to remain competitive over these next couple years. Then we'll be joined by Rylan Styles from Locked On Thunder to gauge where the Thunder are at organizationally. Is this the year they start to take a step forward? Also, we'll take a look at some of the key acquisitions made this offseason, both on and off the court for OKC. Lastly, we'll be joined by Cyrus Sotsis from Locked On Warriors. The Warriors have had some key losses in personnel this offseason. Gary Payton II, Otto Porter Jr., how they're trying to offset those losses with additions like Dante DiVincenzo and Jamichael Green, as well as what to expect from the young trio of the Warriors next season, Moses Moody, Jonathan Kuminga, and James Wiseman. But as always, thank you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. We are free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. Joining us now is Brian Kamenetsky from Locked On Lakers. You can follow him and his brother, his co-host at Locked On Lakers, both at Cam Brothers on Twitter. Now, Brian, LeBron signing an extension to stay with the LA Lakers. Two-year contract extension, just under $100 million, making him the highest paid NBA player in history. Player option in year two. What does LeBron inking his extension, you know, took a little while for him to sign it, but he finally inked the extension. What does it say about his confidence in this Lakers situation, the organization moving forward, and kind of how Rob Pelinka and the rest of the front office kind of plan to navigate things with this team?
Sure. I mean, the first thing I would do is actually push back a little bit on like the it took a little while part, because that's actually something that I've seen in a lot of different places and even, you know, with a lot of fans, but it really didn't. Like the Lakers could make this offer on the 4th of August, and I presume that they did. Basically took like 2 weeks. Like, could have gone into the season. It could have gone through training camp, you know, through December, through the playoffs, through the like all of this stuff. So relatively speaking, I think it was a pretty quick process and pretty painless. This was the contract I expected that he would sign with that extra year as an option. They can kind of see what Bronny's up to, you know, in that first year of eligibility when he might be able to get in the league. But if he doesn't, they can just stay with the Lakers for another. He's got flexibility. The Lakers get a little bit of certainty. They can do something like go out and sacrifice cap space, whatever they might have for next offseason or even two off seasons in a Kyrie Irving deal and something. Maybe that allows them to pick up a couple extra players that this roster really, really needs. Because regardless of what the Lakers do, it's not just a guy like Irving or you know, whether Buddy Hield or Miles Turner. They need as many good players as they can possibly get. And so that probably would mean eating into cap space for next summer, for the following summer, which you are obviously more willing to do if you're secure that LeBron is at least going to be there for those seasons.
Does this make it, in your eyes, you know, more or maybe even less likely that, you know, a Russell Westbrook, you know, solution is potentially on the horizon, given, you know, James is saying, hey, you know what? I'm here. I'm going to be here for at least the next couple of years. And we know that, you know, Russ is on the hook for this next season. So maybe the Lakers could punt on this next season, just run it back and have Russ be there, you know, in whatever role they decide he can, you know, actually take, whether that's actually continuing to start, coming off the bench, whatever. Maybe they put him on ice and they give him the John Wall treatment just because he's too detrimental to the success of the team. Whatever that situation may be, they could punt on it and then have that cap space next summer to play with. But it seems, you know, it wouldn't seem to be the best idea punting on another year of LeBron James in his, what, seventh prime?
Something like that. And like, you know, I saw something like, you know, the other day, like he's primed to have like the best 20th season in NBA history. I'm like, how many are we choosing from? But yeah, I agree. But you know, the longevity here is amazing. I don't think one has a whole lot to do with the other in terms of confidence that Westbrook is going to be moved or a belief that LeBron is taking pressure off. I just feel like LeBron looked at the landscape. He knows the Lakers are trying to trade Westbrook. He knows the Lakers would offer that second pick to Brooklyn if it meant Kyrie Irving. And when push comes to shove, maybe they'll do it with Indiana, but there's no reason to make the Indiana deal for Buddy Hield, Miles Turner. There's no reason to do that quickly because nobody else is threatening to take those players away from the Lakers. There's been zero reporting that other teams around the league are going to swoop in and take Buddy Hield and or Miles Turner away from Pelinka and the Lakers. And if that were to be the case, then the Lakers would have to decide. I think the most underrated thing about this is LeBron likes it in Los Angeles. His family likes it in Los Angeles. His businesses are here. He's got a lot of stuff that goes on here. He doesn't want to uproot his family again. He's got kids in school, and he doesn't want to be away from his family. And so you start to put all of those things together. He didn't come to LA specifically because of the Lakers or because the Lakers gave him the best opportunity to win. That wasn't the case when he signed the deal originally with the Lakers. It's certainly not the case now. He hopes both things can be true at once. But I think ultimately trying to read stuff into the possibility of a Westbrook trade based on the fact that he signed the extension, I don't think there's a lot there because I just don't see one as having a whole lot to do with the other. Lakers will trade Westbrook if they can. Doing that is not easy. I mean, nobody wants him.
Yeah, or it'd be done by now, right? But and obviously the biggest holdup in all of this is Kevin Durant and, you know, how that situation pans out.
Or Donovan Mitchell, there's the Utah deal. I mean, all this stuff, the Lakers have very little, and LeBron understands this, the Lakers have very little to do with the timing of any of these trades, except for, I suppose, something with Indiana.
And you mentioned the word kind of pressure there, and you know, any potential pressure on, you know, LeBron or on the organization, on LA to, you know, maybe make one of these deals, and kind of the Indiana one being the one that, you know, is maybe doable right now, but, you know, compared
to the
other two,
probably want to wait to see can they inject themselves into a Brooklyn deal? Can they inject themselves into something, you know, with Utah? Like there's no rush for them either. So I presume that that's a possibility only because those two guys aren't necessarily attached to any other team. They're not like big superstars that are on the block, but I don't know for sure that that's actually true.
So then I guess when does the pressure potentially set in for the Lakers, right? This is a team that, you know, missed the playoffs last year. Like it's, you know, when does that happen where, you know, if they get off to a bad start in the season, do they kind of maybe break the emergency glass button and say, okay, we've got to deal Russ now. Like, when does that happen in your eyes?
You mean related to LeBron or just
no,
broadly?
Related to the Lakers, I guess, and just, right, be, you know, feeling the pressure to, you know, rather than ride things
already
out
happening.
Rush.
Like, okay. There will be fans at the opening, you know, when the Lakers open, I think it's October 20th or whatever it is against the Clippers at the Crypt. You know, they're going to be Lakers fans with torches and pitchforks there if Westbrook is still on the team. Like, people are upset about it now. There's just nothing they can do about it. And that's, you know, that's the thing. It's like the pressure is there. Everybody knows that this team is not good enough, even if everything goes well. They're not good enough to win the Western Conference. I mean, without just crazy, bizarre things happening throughout the conference. So that's already there, but like, this is the bed that they made. They knew or should have known that when they made this trade last year, and it was a terrible idea when they did it, that this was a 2-year commitment, that they were on the hook for a couple seasons, because if it doesn't work, you're married to Westbrook because you can't get rid of him. And so it failed in, I would like to think, more spectacular fashion than they anticipated. But that doesn't change the fact that they still don't have a lot of ability to change the landscape of it, because this is the deal that they made.
Yeah, trading for Russ was, you know, a deal that was either going to work out incredibly well or as
yeah,
you said,
funny, like, I always make
in spectacular
this joke,
fashion.
I always make the joke, like, our most downloaded podcast episode of 2021 or whatever it was, the day after they traded for Russell Westbrook. Our second most downloaded podcast was the one we did like 4 days before that, when the rumors were starting to really pick up about how it couldn't possibly be true because that was such a terrible idea. So like, those were the two most downloaded shows that we did last year.
The duality of Russell, yes, Westbrook and of Locked On Lakers. But Brian, when you look at this, just, you know, this situation and also just the NBA landscape, does what's currently going on with KD, what we've seen happen with James Harden. Hey, wouldn't you know what happened with Anthony Davis as he found his way to the LA Lakers? Do those situations maybe make you a little less confident that this deal means that LeBron's going to be there for these next 2 years? Like, if the situation becomes completely untenable in LA, do you think there might be a world where LeBron's like, all right, get me out of here?
No, I mean, maybe. I mean, but untenable, like, it's got, like, when you say completely untenable, like, it's got to be like as untenable gets. Because the other thing about this is, and I think this is also something that LeBron understands, where's he going to go? He's, you know, pushing 40. He's stated that wherever Bronny plays, once Bronny's in the league, I'm going to go there. So, or I'm going to try really, really damn hard to do it. So you don't have, it's not like you get LeBron for 4 years, you know. So who's going to give up a lot to get him? That's part of the problem. He's an extraordinarily difficult player to trade at this point. And, you know, is he going to go sign? Let's say he opts out of that second year. Lakers can't trade him this year. And so, you know, just for the CBA rules. So maybe that next season, if it's really bad, he demands a trade, but to where? He's going to be a free agent. Well, maybe if he says, okay, I'll opt into that last year or whatever, I'll waive the opt out. Well, okay, well then is he going to be able to go play with, like, there's just, and even then, how much are you going to give up for 2 years of LeBron? How many teams can absorb him that have? And I think LeBron understands this, and I don't think he wants to put himself out there in a situation where actually nobody wants you quite as much as you want. And he understands he kind of made this situation, at least to some degree, in LA, be it by pushing for the Westbrook deal. And finally, he's a made guy. He's got the legacy already. He doesn't need another title to cement something. Anybody who thinks he's better than Jordan already does. Anybody who doesn't isn't going to change that with one more ring. So I feel like he's content here. He's late in career. He wants that one special season at the end of it and retain the flexibility to do it. LA is as good a place as any. So I'd be surprised if that happened. It would have to go really bad.
How will the situation play out for LeBron James and the LA Lakers this upcoming season? What does this extension look like, the life of it, over these next couple of years in LA? And yeah, does Bronny eventually leave town? Does LeBron eventually leave town to go team up with Bronny Jr. somewhere else? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Lakers. Brian, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks a lot.
Coming up, is this the year that the OKC Thunder start accumulating some wins, or is it just focused on development yet again? Plus, what are some of the key acquisitions that the Thunder have made this offseason, both on and off the court, to impact this next year's team? But first, a quick message from our friends over at Rocket Money. So if you say that you keep, you know, needing to make a budget but never do, if somehow you keep, you know, missing credit card payments, or if you're afraid to even look at your bank account, then it's time you take back control of your financial life. Meet Rocket Money, formerly Truebill, the best financial app ever. So why did Truebill change its name to Rocket Money? Truebill, now backed by Rocket Companies, has grown from a bill management app into a full-on personal finance empowerment tool that helps over 3.5 million people with budgeting, lowering bills, canceling subscriptions, and more, saving each of their members on average $700 a year. And with all that growth comes the next evolution in Truebill's story, a new name. Bottom line, Rocket Money is everything about Truebill, but with a fresh new look and feel. So start canceling your unused subscriptions and save money at rocketmoney.com/lockedonNBA. That's rocketmoney.com/lockedonNBA, or download the app from the Apple App Store or Google Play. Continue on here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. We are free and available on all platforms. Joining us now is Rylan Styles from Locked On Thunder. You can follow on Twitter at Rylan_Styles. Now, Rylan, as we approach this next NBA season, kind of trying to take a look at the OKC Thunder, what in your eyes is kind of the primary goal of the Thunder team this next season? Is it still development, you know, first and foremost, above all else? Or is this maybe the year where you kind of hope to see some wins start to translate in OKC?
I still think that this year is focusing on player development and focusing on the group that you have. I think that the roster is finally at a point where at every sense of the game, at every point in the game, you're going to have guys on the floor who you care about and who you think can impact the future of Thunder basketball. You mix that with the coaching staff improvements, bringing in Chip England, the renowned and one of the best shooting coaches, if not the best shooting coach in the NBA. That helps a ton as well. I think that you're focusing on player development. It's a very, very young team still, and young teams typically don't have wins translate on their record their first year together. But this team is very talented, very young, and I think that you're going to focus on development. And if wins come, they come, and you kind of readjust. But the plan going in, I think, is just how can the team get better individually.
You mentioned that there very briefly, the addition of Chip England, who, you know, the shooting coach largely credited for Kawhi Leonard's transformation while in San Antonio. What are you kind of hoping to see him achieve in OKC, and how huge of an addition is he to this OKC team?
I think that with this hire and even Vince Rossman as well coming over from Philadelphia, I think that it just sends another message to the fan base that the rebuild is heading in the right direction. These are two guys who are staples of organizations. San Antonio for Chip, for Vince, it was Philadelphia. And for Vince Rossman, I mean, you survive 2, 3, 4 regime changes in the front office and you're still there. That shows how valuable you truly are, because a guy didn't fire you to bring in his own guy. Same thing for Chip England, of course, surviving in San Antonio for that long with Popovich. It shows the value that he brings to a team and can help identify guys who can improve shooting the basketball. So getting those two guys to sign on to this rebuild shows that they believe this thing is in the right direction, in my opinion. And then also, just for Chip England's sake, how many guys can he sprinkle that magic to? I think that the number one guy is Josh Giddey. If you get him to be an above average shooter from three, that really opens up his ceiling and opens up his game long-term in the NBA. And then how many other guys are going to get the benefit of that? Literally, this team was the worst three-point shooting team last year. You can list every single player on the roster and say they need to work with Chip England. He can't fix them all, but if he fixes a few of them, then the ceiling gets even larger for these young players.
Yeah, what in your mind is a serviceable 3-point shooting percentage for Josh Giddey? Like, what would you be content with if we're checking in sometime next summer into the season? What would you be happy with for a 3-point percentage for Josh Giddey?
I think that you look at the numbers and you see how he's an elite passer in the 98th percentile passing the ball according to Basketball Index. We already know he can play make. He has that floater, and off of that floater comes playmaking as well, driving kick and those sort of things around the rim. If you have to respect Josh Giddey and go above the free throw line extended to kind of guard him at the 3-point line, then he can start to dictate you with his playmaking and dribbling. And you saw him going more full head of steam at the rim in summer league even, and improving that part of his game. I think that with Josh Giddey, you're looking for like 35, 36, 37% from three. And if he falls anywhere in that range, I'd be extremely happy, because that means that he's added another level, another arsenal to his game to help him achieve great things in the NBA.
Now, Rylan, this OKC team, it feels like they have so many mouths to feed as far as just young guys, a lot of talent up and down the roster. But eventually, you know, I feel like a lot of rebuilding teams kind of start to encounter this problem, is you have so many mouths to feed and not enough minutes to go around. So how does Mark Daigneault kind of balance giving everyone on this Thunder team adequate run? And, you know, who do you maybe see possibly getting squeezed from the rotation, or who maybe will spend some time, you know, at the G League level with the OKC Blue this upcoming season?
I think that everyone outside of Chet Holmgren will spend time with the OKC Blue this year in terms of the picks. And that's been the trend for the Thunder these last couple of years. I mean, last year, even as good as Jeremiah Robson-Earl's rookie year was, he was with the Blue. Even as good as Trey Mann was, he went for a 30 piece against the best defense in the NBA and had a couple more 29 point outings. He still played with the G League team as well. So like they are accustomed to sending guys to the G League and not viewing it as a demotion, but more so just you have to get reps. A guy who I think will go down there as Usman Jang. I think that Usman Jang is a guy who the Thunder see long-term as a fit for them, and they picked him high in the lottery. They traded 3 first-round picks to go get him. You can throw away those Sam Presti first-round pick jokes all you want to, because he did invest them into this guy, Usman Jang. But on the surface level right now, I think that the pathway for him to develop specifically is that G League route, because then you can allow him to play on-ball, which he doesn't get many on-ball minutes in the NBA as the roster is currently constructed. But you also get him to play off ball in an unpressurized environment where he can just try things out down there when playing off ball, and seeing how that works for him offensively. Kind of one of the key focal points for him will be how that translates whenever you have to play with Josh Giddey and SGA. You can't play on ball all of that often. But when you look at this roster, there's a lot of interesting guys. But the ones you have to throw minutes to are Josh Giddey, SGA, Chet Holmgren. I think that it's Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, Trey Mann, Lou Dort, Kenneth Williams. Like, they need minutes. The rest of them, I mean, would it shock you if Aaron Wiggins is bouncing back and forth to the G League because he can't get minutes in the NBA. Maybe a little bit. I have him in my two deep roster right now. But I mean, it wouldn't shock me if Taylor Maldon and Vit Krejci, two guys that are very young, aren't even on this team come October 19th, much less are going to the G League and things of that nature. So the Thunder minutes will be interesting, but I do think that it's going to clear itself up naturally just from the sense of they're comfortable with the G League and it's literally in their own building. That's a huge plus. You're not sending these guys across the country to go play in the G League like the Blue play in the Paycom Center, just like the Thunder do. So you can send these guys down and call them back up within 3 hours. And it's not viewed as a demotion or you're not disattached from the NBA organization. That's a big plus. And then, of course, injuries are going to happen. Guys are going to get bumped and bruised, and they're going to be out for a game where, okay, here's your shot, Poku. Here's a 20-minute night after not playing for the last two games. And you can kind of see how that gels within an NBA season.
You know, I feel like that Sam Presti first-round pick joke was a bit of a targeted shot there, Rylan. I love me some good Sam Presti first-round pick jokes, but, you know, maybe I will have to do away with those, at least for the time being, because it has been nice to see the Thunder actually use some of those first-round picks from the hoard that he's got, you know, sitting behind his desk over there in OKC. But taking a look at, you know, what the Thunder have done, what to you has been the best move or the biggest move, at least so far, of the offseason for the Thunder?
To me, it's been, of course, drafting Chet Holmgren, and that of course, is due to the lottery luck. So if you want to count that as a move for the Thunder itself. But I think that it shows also that whenever you had that surprise pick, and I'm sure you're the same way at the team facility, just shocked whenever the Magic go Paolo Banchero. Whenever you have that surprise to still stay with Chet Holmgren, kind of just reaffirm that was Sam Presti's guy. And he has a track record. If he picks you in the top 10, he's going to be right. I mean, we can talk about the draft misses on, you know, Perry Jones, but in the top 10, he's been amazing. And so for him to single Chet Holmgren out, and even with that surprise maneuver of Jabari Smith, my 1-1, falling past the Magic, he didn't waver or change his course. To me, that shows just how much he believes in Chet Holmgren. And if Sam Presti believes in you, that's always a good sign. I do also like the extension for Kenny Hustle and re-signing Lou Dort to a long-term deal, because I think that those extensions do not hamper you in any way. In fact, they give you even more flexibility, because those two guys, I think, are on deals that as this cap begins to rise and as their play continues to match what they did last year and the year prior in OKC, they're still very tradable. And so if you trade those two guys plus three first-round picks, four first-round picks, what kind of sweepstakes can you get into for the next disgruntled star? So you haven't taken yourself out of that market by any means by signing these guys to long-term deals. In fact, you've helped your case because you need money to trade to get back some of these big time guys that are going to be demanding out next year. It's just the way the NBA works. Every summer, there's somebody that wants out of their situation. So the Thunder have prepared themselves to take a ton of different routes here. And if this young core works out and you don't want to go get a guy, then of course they complement your core as well in Dort and Wim. So I like what they've done this offseason. I don't really think there's been a bad move this summer. So it's kind of all good. But of course, the addition of Chet Holmgren is either going to make or break how long this thing takes in OKC.
You talk about Sam Presti's confidence, right, in sticking with Chet Holmgren. What about your confidence in Chet Holmgren? What about his rookie of the year odds? How are you feeling there, Rylan?
I think that he has a chance to do it because he's going to be given the keys in the sense of last year, Mark started Josh Giddey every game that Josh Giddey was healthy for. He'll do the same thing for Chet Holmgren. And then Chet Holmgren will have all the eyes on him. He'll get the block numbers up. That'll look eye-popping on a box score. He's a big man that might shoot, you know, 38-39% from three. That'll be eye-popping as well. He's just going to have a really well-rounded year. If I had to bet my money right now at BetOnline, I would stick it on Paolo Banchero, but I do like Chet Holmgren's Rookie of the Year odds for me.
It'll be bittersweet when Chet Holmgren runs up second in Rookie of the Year voting to Jabari Smith Jr. But what do the Thunder look like next season? Will Chip England be able to transform Josh Giddey's shot moving forward? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Thunder. Rylan, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, the Golden State Warriors have lost some key contributors from their championship run in Gary Payton II and Otto Porter Jr. How do the additions of Dante DiVincenzo and JaMychal Green offset those losses? What do they bring to the table for this Warriors team? Plus, what can we expect out of the young guys on the Warriors roster this next season? We're going to get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Free and available on all podcast platforms. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Joining us now is Cyrus Sotsas from Locked On Warriors. You can follow on Twitter at Dog Surf Roadshow, which every time I say it is one of the best handles across the entire Locked On network. Now, Cyrus, this is a Warriors team fresh off of a title run, but they're not going to look exactly like the same team this next season. There have been a handful of players, you know, who have left the Warriors organization this offseason. We'll run through those names. Gary Payton II, Otto Porter Jr., Nemanja Bjelica, Juan Toscano-Anderson, and Damian Lee. You know, a handful of guys that are no longer going to be a part of this Warriors organization. Of those names, who leaving impacts the Warriors the most from the list of guys who won't be back next season?
Oh, I literally was just asked this question yesterday by one of our colleagues, Josh Lloyd, who hosts Locked On Fantasy Basketball. And the easy answer is Gary Payton II. He's such a defensive savant, man. The Warriors are a deep team. And I'm starting to kind of pay attention again to national media a little bit, seeing what they're saying about the Warriors. One thing that I'm hearing right now, which is just an utter falsehood, is that the Warriors are not deep. That I don't find that to be true at all. A huge reason why the Warriors did not bring Gary Payton II back, beside the fact that he costed a lot of money and the Warriors' cap situation is just nightmarish, where for every dollar they spend, they're paying somewhere in the $12 range in terms of a luxury tax penalty. Now, the new CBA could bring the Warriors tremendous relief because I'm hearing a lot of speculation that from a very trustworthy sources that the new CBA next year will not penalize teams for their draft picks in terms of a luxury tax. That would change the game night and day for the Warriors because they only have one undrafted player who's a marquee player for them, and that's Andrew Wiggins. And really the whole thing of penalizing a team for draft picks goes against the very spirit of the luxury tax because the Oklahoma City Thunder could face massive repercussions in a few years, and they're a small market team. So the point is that the Warriors might have let go of Gary Payton II this year because of the luxury tax penalties, but they also are deep. Like, they're ready for Moses Moody to play some significant minutes this year. He's going to take up a lot of Gary Payton II's minutes. They added Dante DiVincenzo, who a lot of individuals I've spoke with speak very highly of him. So he's going to be taking a lot of those minutes. But still, Gary Payton II, he was just such a great clubhouse guy. His defense, I mean, whether in the playoffs, he was battling Ja Morant, he was giving Nikola Jokic issues, who's much bigger than him. And despite being 6'3", he played like a big. I mean, he had a post-up game. He caught lobs for dunks. He actually had a decent corner three. So he wasn't really the liability offensively that a lot of people made him out to be at times. So it's going to be Gary Payton II. But at the same time, the Warriors are so deep that I think they're going to be okay.
You know, and first off, you try saying luxury tax penalty five times fast and it's going to be game over. But, you know, I'm glad you mentioned there, you know, the addition of Dante DiVincenzo, because I wanted to ask you about his addition to this Warriors team, you know, a guy who maybe brings you a little bit more offense than Gary Payton II, but probably a little bit less on the defensive side of the ball. And then also Jamichael Green, you know, a forward who's had, you know, a lot of success in the NBA. What did their additions mean? And how do you kind of, you know, imagine them fitting into this Warriors rotation?
Yeah, the DiVincenzo addition is huge. I brought on Kane Pittman, I think that's his name, the Locked On Bucks host. We had a crossover recently, and the main reason from my end for it was to pick his brain about Dante DiVincenzo because he played for the Bucks for all those years, and Kane made it very clear that the Warriors got a gem. You know, Stephen Curry and I can't remember if it was Draymond Green or Steve Kerr, who was the second person recruiting him, but that recruiting pitch worked. It's likely just going to be a one-year deal. His second year is a player option. But what he brings that Gary Payton II does not bring is ball handling. He's a legitimate point guard who can handle the rock very effectively. He's a fantastic passer. Like you said, he's a solid shooter. And then his defense, supposedly, we'll find out, but his defense is supposedly exemplary. So people are very encouraged about DiVincenzo coming in to replace Gary Payton II. But Jamichael Green, to me, was the absolute steal for the Warriors this offseason, just because he's not old yet. He's 32. He's 6'8". He can play the small ball five. His three-point shot went down last year, but he explained in his one of his early interviews since joining the Warriors that the shooting numbers, at least from beyond the arc, went down largely because he was suffering some sort of hand or wrist injury. And he also just didn't have a lot of spacing on that Nuggets team. without Jamal Murray, without who's the other guy? Michael Porter Jr., thank you, who was out for the year. I mean, those are two players who are legitimate three-point threats, and they didn't have a great shooting team last year. So when Jermichael was out there lurking, trying to shoot a three, there were defenders all up in his face, and he was not seeing clean looks. So, you know, the hope is that the three-point numbers that went down last year were an anomaly and that he's going to come back and give them tremendous minutes. But it really, Jermichael Green is one of these guys that, again, he can play the stretch five. He's a fantastic defender. He can hit the three. And that's going to be big. The moment they added him, all my worries about losing Gary Payne II seeded just completely went away, and I felt good again. Because he's going to be a massive addition for this team, and expect him to play a lot of minutes.
Now, of the Warriors' kind of a youthful trio in Jonathan Kuminga, Moses Moody, and James Wiseman, who do you envision kind of stepping into the biggest role out of those three this next season? I know you mentioned Moses Moody there a moment ago, and specifically, what are you kind of hoping to see from those three guys moving forward? To your point a few moments ago, Cyrus, you were talking about, you know, maybe some of the national media doesn't view this Warriors team as deep. I'm inclined to agree with you. I view this Warriors team as insanely deep because they have talent, like, you know, all the way through guys 12, 13, and 14 seemingly like on the roster. And then you look at this, you know, young trio of players and all the untapped potential there. So what are you kind of hoping to see out of that three? And who do you think is going to be the most important member of those three players?
Well, Moses Moody is most NBA ready. He's got a fantastic outside shot. He can hit the three with ease. His ball handling's okay. I think that could improve, but defensively he's stout. Offensively, again, fantastic shooter. He's already advanced his skill set in terms of setting blocks and screens. He's ready to go. I think that's the biggest reason why Gary Payne II was not fought for by the Warriors front office in terms of re-signing him and at least trying to come close to match the Portland Trailblazers. They offered Gary Payne II the mid-level exception, and that was it. And Gary Payne II got a lot more money from Portland. So Moses Moody is a player they're counting on. He's shown tremendous maturity. He's been referenced as having a quote unquote old soul, whatever that means to you. But it ultimately references, you know, the fact that he acts much older than he really is, which is just 20 years old. Now, Jonathan Kuminga is a player who's a little more raw right now, but his ceiling is much higher. In the summer league, he posted solid numbers. His first game was weak. And he took that personally. Draymond Green called him out for it, and he responded with numerous games. I think he finished averaging just under 20 points a game in summer league. They actually made him play the point guard position in summer league just to kind of get his ball handling skills developed, but he's really strong inside. His post game is developed. He's actually, and I learned this yesterday with Josh Lloyd, he's actually the most effective finisher for the Golden State Warriors. I was not actually aware of that. It was a trivia section. That was the one question I got wrong. Jonathan Kuminga could be a megastar in this game. I'm very curious to see what he's going to do next year. And just the fact that Moody and Kuminga are going to be getting minutes by itself is huge. Because last year they had so many other veterans that and Kerr just really doesn't trust rookies and goes to them only if he has to or if he just needs to mix things up. This year he's going to be given the minutes because they need him. I would say Moses Moody is the most NBA ready and expect him to give you 10 plus points a game this year. Jonathan Kuminga's ceiling is limitless. I mean, this guy could be a Hall of Famer someday. I mean, I know that's shooting for the stars, but that's how high his potential is. And I think he's going to be giving you 15 points a game in the regular season. Now, James Wiseman is the massive question mark. This is someone who either could be traded midway through the season because he's going to be owed $12 million a year next year. And for a team who's deep in the luxury tax and worrying about that, and we still don't know how the CBA is going to play out. So the team might decide we don't want to pay him $12 million a year, which is what a number two pick will get in his fourth year. So he might get traded or he might live up to his potential. I mean, the team is counting on him to be their primary backup center. I envision him taking on the role that Nemanja Bjelica had last year. He does space the floor. He's got a fantastic shooting stroke. And he covers the floor just so effectively. He glides with these massive steps from one end to the other in no time at all. And I'll say this, and I've said this before, I've spoken with a lot of current and former players, executives, coaches in the NBA. Not one person has said a bad thing about James Wiseman. They all expect tremendous things from him. He just has to be healthy. And he is. I mean, he played in the summer league. All indications are he's a go. And it's a question mark in terms of predicting how he's going to turn out. He could be a superstar too. We'll find out. But yeah, in terms of Moody and Kuminga, those are going to be guys that I think are going to light it up this year.
All right, last thing for you here, Cyrus. But Andre Iguodala, will he be a Warrior again this season? Do you want to see Iggy back, or is it maybe time for him to hang up the sneakers?
I would want him back if the alternative, because that was actually the topic of discussion on one of my recent episodes of Locked On Warriors, is what happens if Andre Iguodala decides to retire? Because that's your 14th roster spot that is completely open. They're just leaving it open for him. They're not going to add a 15th player to the roster. They're going to go with 14 and two ways. So in my opinion, if the alternative is like another G leaguer, then come back. His wisdom is valuable. He calms Draymond Green down. When he plays, he can still very much play, but his body's clearly breaking down. I mean, he's got like old man, my neck and my back type injuries, you know, like Azel. He's at that level, man. These are old man, like his knee hurts. It's just the kind of stuff that's what happens when you get old. These parts of your body start to creak. And so if you're going to replace him with someone like a Carmelo Anthony, a Lou Williams, you might get another center like a Boogie Cousins, then I say, Andre, I love you. I hope I'm speaking for Dub Nation's behalf. You know, you've done a tremendous job with this organization. You were a finals MVP. You were there for all four championships. But at the same time, it's like his body's breaking down. I don't know if he couldn't finish the year last year. He missed most of the season. So to me, it depends on what you're going to replace him with. Like if you're going to replace him with a G leaguer, please come back Andre Iguodala. But if they have another veteran lined up, if he decides to retire, I might want to see that veteran, because at least you can get some minutes from him and hopefully not deal with the health issues that Andre Iguodala has been dealing with. But ultimately, he's earned that cachet with the team, and they're just sitting there waiting for him to decide. It's really weird. I've never seen anything like that, where a player is just given like complete carte blanche to decide his future whenever he wants. I imagine the deadline's probably going to be close to the training camp, but it is interesting that he's just kind of lingering and hasn't decided what he's going to do.
Will Dante DiVincenzo and maybe Moses Moody continuing to grow be enough to offset the loss of Gary Payton II? Will Andre Iguodala be back in a Warriors jersey next season, or will he hang up the sneakers for good? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Warriors. Cyrus, appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Jackson, my friend, anytime you need me, I'm here for you, unless you call and I don't respond like I did one time, but otherwise, anytime.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, appreciate you for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all podcast platforms. We're also on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA. Be sure to like, comment, and subscribe. But as always, thank you so much for listening. And we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.